Welcome back to the Amazing Gamers Podcast, a just for fun production about media that matters and why we love it so much. Your host, Nathan Lamb, is not an amazing gamer, but he sure knows a few people who are. This is our conversation for today. And welcome back to the Amazing Gamers Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Lamb, and I am thrilled to have an amazing guest with me here today, former colleague.
I am Rachel, and we work together in elder services.
Which was an awesome thing, both working in elder services and working together. Like right before COVID hit, I still remember when we got to know each other. Like right before COVID hit, there was this outreach event where it was like a city hosted outreach event with like a bunch of service providers. And I needed somebody from your department to come with me. And I thought about it. I was like, I wonder who would be good at this. And I went and like found you, I think, and asked if you would. I was like, hey, would you like to hang out and do a table and hand out flyers for an evening?
Absolutely.
That was basically what you said. And it turned out to be like a fun and interesting event. And I was like, man, Rachel's good at this. I think we should do this more often. And then COVID hit like 3 weeks later.
Yeah, I think it was just a few weeks later because I had started with AFC in June. And so COVID hit like 6 to 9 months later, we were all out of office and everything shutting down.
The world changed quite a bit in that time, but we still were able to get in touch. And it was good. I was glad that we did that. It kind of made it so we chatted more, and I got to learn about how we had some common interests in video games, which I definitely want to talk with you today about. Working in elder services, I want to talk about that for a minute because it really hits me sometimes. Like I loved my time in elder services and the value of it kind of hits me at random times. People don't know elder services exists until there's a crisis and then they need it yesterday.
Exactly.
And you don't know like what's out there. This is probably new to you. And it's like, so when I'm talking to people in that, even though I was never a social worker, my friend Rachel is a social worker.
I am.
So like, you know the ropes. I know the basics. So like, I'll listen and I'll like get a sense of what they're dealing with. And like, I won't give them like clinical advice, but I can sometimes point them in the right direction or say, you know, that's completely normal. Or I can like have a suggestion sometime. I don't know if you get that too.
Yeah. So a lot of the caregivers I work with, it's not only that they're not always aware of the resources that are out there when the crisis happens and they become a caregiver, but it's also the transition. Like a lot of times it's children caring for their elderly parents. And it's such a change in dynamic when you kind of become the parent. And so there's so much emotional change that they deal with, so much just trying to figure out the bureaucracy of everything, all the red tape for whatever they can qualify for. And, you know, it's just such a hard landscape to navigate, really. And so I think validating people a lot is just, that's kind of number one, just like, even if you don't fully know where they're coming from and don't know their exact situation, then it's like, you know, I can understand this is so difficult. And just validating, being a listening ear is probably one of the best things that you can do for someone if you don't have any clinical advice or anything, because it's so isolating to be a caregiver and transitioning into that role.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with that. I think one that I help people sometimes with, because we had a program that provided this sort of support, is when people are disagreeing with their parents on what their parents should do.
You see
that one a lot.
Yep. I've been in a few homes in the middle of those disagreements, and it's hard as an outsider to try to mediate that because there's just so much there, and it's difficult for the parent as they're getting older and feeling like they're losing a bit of their agency, and now they're being told what to do. They have less ability to do things for themselves. It can be hard for them to accept that they now have to depend on the care of someone else, and you know, there's often a lot of resistance in that.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's easy to tell someone else to accept what is and ask for help. But if you've ever been in that position, I don't think that's like, you know, sometimes when I talk to people about that, you know, I'm like, what age do you think you're going to be when you want people to tell you how you should live your life.
Dead.
There doesn't come an age where that's what most people are looking for. And it's, mm-hmm. I think that's part of what makes it so difficult. And you have to remind these yeah. people who care deeply about someone that they kind of have mm-hmm. to find a way to meet them, you know, halfway with.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not easy, but I love when I'm able to sort of help people who are really sort of dealing with it. And it's strange because like people bring it up to me. I don't know what it is. It's like,
yeah, dude, it's like they just sense that you used to be involved in that world.
I think so. It's something like that. I think I have people who randomly bring up video games to me and I'm like, how do you know I love video games? Is it the t-shirt I'm wearing? I don't know, but I honestly love that stuff. I love it when people bring up things that I have some knowledge in and some yeah. wish to help with. This whole concept of caring for the caregiver. Mm-hmm. And you use it in your line of work in one way. I use it in a slightly different way. Like, yeah. do you want to explain how it is in your context? And then I can explain how I apply it.
Well, I guess in my context, it's a little bit more, obviously it's a more professional setting. So I do formal trainings with caregivers on ways to communicate with people, as especially, for example, when someone has dementia, that can completely overhaul the relationship that you have with someone. So I do a lot of work with them on conflict resolution, learning new ways to just help with certain behaviors. And I feel like one major thing that a lot of caregivers kind of forget about is like self-compassion, and they'll beat themselves up or be like, oh, but my dad doesn't want to do this. I can't get him to do this no matter what. And it's like, okay, you have to be compassionate with yourself and just understand you're doing one of the hardest jobs in the world. And it's, you just gotta be kind to yourself and take the time to take care of yourself as well. Cause if you're not doing that, then you can't really properly care for someone else in a compassionate and the way that you want to be caring for them.
Yeah, I think it's such an important message. And I love that a lot of organizations that work with older adults and caregivers really prioritize that.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think of it in that context. I think care for the caregiver, yes, if you're caregiving, because they do have one of the hardest jobs, and it does attract some of the most amazingly dedicated and empathetic, mm-hmm. compassionate people in the world.
Yeah.
I also use it for people where I can feel like they're kind of getting a little overwhelmed with everything that's going on, and like to try and remind them and reach out and be like, you know, take a breath, think of your own needs. Find something yeah. that's going to take your mind off whatever this is for a little while, and then come back at it fresh.
Yeah.
Come back at it, pick up a small piece.
Yeah, I think that's perfect, because a lot of times when I meet a new caregiver, I'll be like, even if you can only take 10 to 15 minutes a day for yourself, it sounds like such a small period of time, but you really need to just carve out that time for yourself. And it's kind of a game changer when it comes to just going nonstop, because it's a 24/7 job, just taking that little chunk of time. Like, hopefully people could take more, but obviously that's not always the case, depending on level of care and the support that a caregiver has. But yeah, just taking that time for yourself is so necessary.
As a parent of two, I can verify that this is immense importance. There are some days where at 3 o'clock, my brain is like just crashed. Like, my brain is basically like the cerebral equivalent of the blue screen of death. It's just zonked. And I'll go to my wife and I'll be like, can I have 15 minutes? And I will just like go and take like a power nap.
Yeah.
And you come back and it's like, it is like your second wind. But remembering to do that, to just sort of regroup, can be really essential too. And it's a powerful thing. And I think of things like care for the caregiver. I think if you're a caring person, life can be a bit much at times too. So you have to like think about what you take on, what you can take on, and trying to keep up with everything. It's a difficult balancing act sometimes.
Yeah. Like a never ending juggling of what to prioritize, and when everything seems it should be prioritized, like, how do you choose that one thing? So it is hard to navigate that.
So I definitely did invite you on to talk about video games today, and I guess one game I'd like to talk about with you is Kirby.
Yeah.
So you are a Kirby fan?
I am a Kirby fan. Part of it is because I would not necessarily call myself an amazing gamer because I don't have the best skills, but I do appreciate it. I love growing up, I loved watching my siblings play video games, and my sister is about 5 years older than me. My older brother's two, and then my younger brother is like 2 years younger than me. So we were just a big video game family. It was something we could all kind of, just get along and enjoy. And so I would always watch video games. I was never the best at them myself. And then, but Kirby was one that I kind of got the hang of. And my younger brother was very, very into it. So it was something as we got older, we started playing it all the time and, just love him. And he's so cute. And pink is my favorite color. So of course, that's a bonus.
So which generation are we talking here? Were you like on the one of the handheld systems?
Yeah, well, I remember playing primarily on like Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64, but I believe I was literally born to love Kirby because he was created in 1992. I was born in 1992, so talk about a happy accident.
It was fate. I mean, what a convergence.
Meant to be. And so I started off with Super Nintendo. I can't remember what that one was called. I think it was like Kirby Superstar or something like that. And
Yeah.
then moved on to Nintendo 64. And there were some Wii games. Like I played so many, like pretty much my whole life, I realized reflecting on this, I'm like, wow, I really have been playing Kirby and various video games like in every stage of life.
Oh my gosh. Have you played the newest one on Switch?
Yes, only the very first few levels of it. I think I'm on like maybe the third or fourth stage, and I'm on Spring Breeze mode. So,
Oh, same,
I'm
same,
not ready
same.
to go into what is it called, wild mode. I might try a stage in that at some point, but I don't know if I can handle it. I don't want to scare myself off. So, Spring Breeze for me.
Same, same. I'm playing it with my daughter. She's almost 5, and it's like th it's a great game for the two of us. And like it's the best one. It's got these like crazy mini games in it too. Or it's got like the silliest mini games that I like get into, and they're so goofy that like you can't help. But I mean, I've definitely had a few times where I've like died and then died laughing. Like it's so silly. But there's the one where you have to like swallow this giant, massive rolling pin, and you're like rolling down a hill and trying to jump over the things. And if you make one mistake, you are just falling
You're
into a
just
bottomless
done.
pit. And
That is one thing
sometimes
I
you get a little
really
laugh.
loved about the new one that you can, like, when you inhale, like when you're like the Kirby Mobile in the very beginning, I was like, that was the first thing. I was like, oh my God, what's happening here? It's so
Yeah.
fun.
It's a lot of fun. I was hoping the kids would get into it, but they always argue over who's going to be Kirby and who's going to be Bandana Waddle Dee.
Oh,
So,
yeah. The age-old question.
it's classic sibling stuff. So usually it's like when my daughter and I have some time in the morning or on the weekend, we'll like pull out Kirby and the Forgotten Land, and we're gonna beat that one at some point. It's taken a little while, but I think with summer here, we're gonna circle back on it. I would say like what was I thinking? Sorry about that. I completely lost my train
Oh,
of
that's
thought, but
okay. Mm.
no, I know what it was now. My son started with Kirby too. Kirby Star Allies was like one of the first games that he completely took charge of and beat when he was about the same age as my daughter now.
Wow, so he was born being good at video games.
I think so. And I think Kirby, what I love about Kirby is I never played Kirby until he discovered Kirby.
Oh, interesting. So you didn't play it when it was back in its heyday.
I did not. No, I've not. You see, I've always been like an RPG fan. I will play the occasional action game, but there's usually like a story behind it. Like I'll have a coworker who lends it to me, or it came with the console. Like I don't really seek out those games unless it's Mario.
One of the classics.
Unless it's Mario, but like he discovered that and had a lot of fun with it. And I was sort of like, I came to appreciate Kirby because it is like so forgiving. The thing is like Mario is adorable, but if you have a 5-year-old who tries to play Mario, you have to proceed with caution because Mario is like an adorable death trap. Like, it looks
An excellent way
adorable.
to put it.
It looks adorable, but if you're like still working on your motor skills, it's a bit much. Whereas Kirby is a lot more forgiving, and you're not constantly having a hole you're going to fall into that will send you back like half the level.
Right. I think that's why I always gravitated more towards Kirby than towards Mario when I was growing up, because I just couldn't really, I could play a little bit, but it was more a game that I'd watch my older siblings play. And actually, my older sister, she was the first one to beat it in our family, but there was no one around when she bought it and when she beat it. So she told us, I was probably 5 or 6 at the time. She told us that when you beat the game, a candy bar comes out of the Super Nintendo. And so I was adamant I was going to win that candy bar. Total lie, but I don't know how video game systems work. So I obviously
Big
never got the
sister
candy
stuff.
bar. I don't know if I ever even beat the game. So who
Yeah.
knows? Maybe there is still that golden candy bar that I could have gotten. But yeah,
It's
just
still
funny
stuck in
sibling
there. It's still,
antics.
the expiration date was 1993,
Yeah,
but
it's crumble in your hands.
how old is your sister? A couple years older than you?
Yeah, she's gonna be 38 this year. She's like 4 and a half, 5 years older than me.
Yep, classic big sis stuff. Yep, that's because I had a big sis like that, and I try to tell my son he's got that same age differential. Like when it's just me and him, when she's not around. But if like something went badly, I was like, there's ways to big brother. I'll do it tactfully and gently, but it's the stuff that goes on because I was little brother, so I know how I've seen both sides of the big bro little sis sort of thing. So yeah, the candy bar. I think it got off light if the candy bar was his best. Well, the one other thing that's kind of funny for me when I was a kid, it was Pac-Man.
Yeah, that was pretty big. I never got super into it other than in arcades, but that was
Oh
a
my
good one.
gosh. When I was 5, I thought Pac-Man was the most amazing thing, and it came full circle. Like last December, we had a weekend at Great Wolf Lodge.
Oh yeah, I've been there with my nephew. Terrified
Yeah.
of water slides, but I'd do it for him.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, I can do like one or two water slides, and then my water slide quotient for the day is
Yeah.
finito. It's like
I'll
if
be
I
in
do
tears
three,
after like one, so.
if I do three, I'm gonna puke or lie down. So let's just keep it to two. But they had the big Pac-Man, like the big wall Pac-Man, like the massive Pac-Man. And I got to play it with my son, and he like bounced off it initially. Like it just did not. He was like, he looked at it and he was like, "Is that it?" And I was like, "Oh, okay." But I got him to try it later, and he sort of saw the appeal of it. And I took him to PAX last weekend, and they had a room full of arcades, and they had Super Pac-Man. And I did a little bit of that with him, but he gravitated more towards Monkey Ball.
Oh,
You ever?
Monkey Ball. I don't think I ever played that.
Oh, Monkey Ball. Monkey Ball is like some of the Kirby mini games where it's so silly. You're basically a little monkey in a ball. And you are rolling down a course, and you can shift the course so that the ball hopefully will stay on the track, but the chances of you flying off the track into a bottomless pit are fairly high. It's probably going to happen like quite a few times. And it's very silly. It's like the same sort of energy as those Kirby mini games where you're kind of pulling and hoping for the best, and physics is doing the rest.
Just kind of throw caution to the wind and go for it. Love a
Oh
good
my
mini
God, you
game.
kind of have to sometimes. You do. So what are you playing these days?
So not as much as I would like to be playing, but I find time during the day or during the week to sometimes play a few games. So my husband and I really like split screen games. And I know I told you before we had been playing It Takes Two. We kind of fell off of that for a while and then just kind of haven't picked back up. It was fun, but I don't think we got past like when they're starting to try to get into the house. Over a
Yeah.
tree thing. I don't know. I'm not as good at it's a lot of it is him going across the course and then waiting for me to catch up. So he's a little bit better than I am. But we played this really cool game that was split screen. It's called A Way Out. And it takes place in a prison and you each play as a different prisoner and you're trying to sneak out of the prison and then you try to evade the police and all. And I was worried there was going to be a lot of me having to have the coordination to like fight off the police or do any of that, the wonderful thing about it is it will tell you what button to press for a sequence. And so it's something I can handle. And then there's a lot of little puzzle things. So we did end up actually completing that game. I think it took us maybe two nights. Like, we really powered that one out. So I was proud of that. But yeah, I do tend to gravitate more towards like puzzle adventure games. So one game that I played recently, it's called Gone Home. I thought it was kind of a horror game, which I do like a lot of the horror games like Slenderman and Blair Witch Project. Like, those games are really cool. And I've always just enjoyed that type of game. So I thought this was going to be more of that, but it was more of like a walk around the house looking for clues type of game. You return from this European vacation, you find that your family's all gone, the house is empty, and you're looking around for clues and stuff. And I mean, it was just kind of like an entertaining thing to play for a couple of hours. And, you know, but I would have preferred if it was a little more, had that like scariness to it, like the Slender Man game. I remember playing that and just being so scared for like weeks after, which is a little embarrassing to admit that I'm getting nightmares from a video game, but it happens.
it definitely does. My son like skews toward horror games, and it was like one of those moments, like, Rachel, if you ever become a parent, like, you like, you're going along, everything is like, you know, as you thought, and then one day you find out that your like kid is into all sorts of weird horror-ish games. And at first you're just like, it can be a little much, and then you just sort of have to like process it. And then you think about it and you're like, you know, I like horror too. And it's like, okay, let's sit down. I'm going to see what this is about. Am I comfortable with this? What's the age rating is like the first thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's always a concern. That's how my nephew is. He's obsessed with horror and horror games. So he actually introduced me to the Slenderman video game. And I'm like, you are 10 years old. Like, how are you knowing about all these different games? But yeah, it is always a concern whenever he asks me, when he spends a week with us every summer. And so he'll always ask me like, oh, can we get this game for the week or this? And I'm like, okay, I need to do some research on this, because God knows what type of craziness you're trying to come at me with.
Oh my gosh. I need to learn about Slenderman, because I'm sure that like, that's probably coming at some point in the near future. Oh, good Lord. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, He started with like Baldi's Basics, and I'm like, whatever, you know. And then like he started branching out into some of these other ones, and like, you know, it's like each one I'm like, okay, I'm evaluating it, and I'm like, all right, is it going to give him nightmares? Is it too scary? The funny thing is, when he first heard about Five Nights at Freddy's, like, we couldn't even discuss that game for like a year. Like, he was fascinated by it, but we couldn't discuss it. It was not allowed. And that game, by the way, like, I haven't seen the newer ones. I always felt the first one was by far the creepiest. Like, it was very, if you like horror,
I should check it out. Yeah, because I've never played those.
Oh my gosh. It's like, I saw a Let's Play of it. Basically, you're like the night watchman at like a Chuck E. Cheese type place. And the animatronics will start walking around at night, and you're in the office and you can't move. The only thing you can do is look at the cameras, and you can close the doors. So when they come by, you need to close the doors, and there's doors on each side. Oh, and by the way, you have limited power. So if you leave the doors shut too long, you will run out of power. And the chances of you having a happy ending at that point are pretty slim. So it's a brilliant little game. And the way that the creatures look at you in the camera, there's definitely times where you will open the camera and they are looking right at the camera.
Yeah.
Like, they know that you're looking at them.
Yeah,
but they won't move while you're looking at them. So it's kind of like Blind Man's Bluff in a way.
Oh, okay.
So it's, and it's cheap. You could get the first one super cheap, and it's creepy. But the thing is that it's like so creepy that, see, my son, there's this guy called Scruffy on YouTube who does videos about sound and music. He's really brilliant. I love his videos. Mm-hmm. He did one about Five Nights at Freddy's that had some of the creepiness in it. And it was awesome. It was like how the series uses sound to enhance the creepiness of the experience. So it was, and this guy knows what he's talking about. So it was really pretty awesome and methodical, but it also had some pretty creepy images of like what the game is like. And I think I was like, how much of that video did you see? And he's just like, looks in his shoes. So I was like, yeah, that's what I thought. It's, you know, these like little moments where you're like, cause you know, Scruffy is like awesome. He talks about all these great games I didn't think. And then sort of wandered into Five Nights at Freddy's, and I was like, oh geez, you know, because you can't watch them 24/7. But one thing I'll add, one game that he did discover through Scruffy that you would probably like is a game called Pikmin 3.
I've heard of that. Yeah, I'm a little familiar, but never played.
You can download a demo of it on the Switch. There's a free demo. It's a two-player co-op. It's split screen, and you have to work together to get, there's like obstacles. You're basically like you're a tiny little astronaut in the garden. And there's things that you need to get. You need to open doors. You need to build bridges. You need to grab fruit to bring it back to your spaceship. And these little guys named Pikmin will help you with that. And you like throw them and they'll take stuff and they'll carry it back to your spaceship. So, but you have to get everyone indoors by the end of the day. So time management and cooperation.
And that sounds right up my alley. I'll have to check that out.
Oh, you should. And in terms of the two-player co-op, it is like the best two-player co-op I've ever seen. My son probably played like 300 hours of Pikmin 3. It was well worth it. It was really, I can't recommend it highly enough, especially when you're telling me about the type of games that you like.
Yeah.
And it's got an element of puzzle too, where you kind of have to figure out, and then time management, there's a lot of replayability because you can look at how your day went and figure out how you could have saved time and done things. And I love that sort of stuff. It's like, it's right up my alley, but
yeah,
it's good stuff. Oh no, my computer with my notes turned off. Oh,
oh no.
Because I was gonna like bring up a couple of things that I was playing, but they're RPGs, so I'm not really sure how familiar you are with that genre. Is that really your thing?
A little bit. I mean, I definitely have watched my siblings play a lot of those games, so I've tried with some different ones, but that was more of something that I would always enjoy watching.
Like Final Fantasy VII?
Yeah, I've not seven, but I've seen the Final Fantasy games. I know my sister was very into, I don't know if you remember this game, Fable. It was for Xbox, and it's like you start out and you can choose to either become the hero or the villain based on how you interact with the different quests and how you interact with people, if you want to help someone or if, are you going to actually do something negative. And that's one thing I'm so mad because it was for Xbox 360 and I cannot find it. I don't think they make it for PlayStation. Can't find it anywhere. But if you like RPGs, I would definitely say Fable, buy an Xbox just to play it.
Oh my gosh. So it's that good. Oh my
gosh.
I
would say so. Yeah.
So Fable is good. I got a couple that I'm working on like since forever. One of them is the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is like a action RPG. It's a little silly. The music in it is really fun. The music in Final Fantasy has always been really a strength of the series. So I'm enjoying it. A lot of folks have very deep feelings for that game. I don't, so I just can kind of appreciate it as like a good beat 'em up with some characters that I really like and some music. I guess we'll see how I feel about it when I'm done. And then the other one is I'm still playing Trails from Zero, which is a wonderful little game. It's about a special support squad of a police squad in a place called Crossbell. It's a fictional city. And your main character is this guy named Lloyd, who's a rookie detective. And his big brother was like the greatest ever detective and died. And Lloyd kind of wants to follow in his footsteps. And he's really good, but he's also very new. And he's sort of thrown in with these three oddballs. One of them is a guy named Randy, who's kind of a bro, but he's actually like a really sweet, thoughtful, strong person beneath the bro persona. The Trails series is always about, you meet people and you have a certain impression of them. And then as you spend time around them, their character gets revealed and you see that there's more to them than just that first impression. And you really like another one is Tio, who's like a teenage girl. And she's always like giving the side eye, you know, she's very sort of blunt but like in a funny sort of way, she's kind of like hyper. She's like a genius in some ways, and you get to sort of see her story. Like it was like 20 hours into the game before they had the first portrait of her where she gave a real smile. Believe I screenshotted that.
Yeah,
it's like Tio, because like you and Tio like solved a problem together. You figured something out together. And she flashed you the smile for once. And her story, I can already tell, is going to be amazing. And then the last one is Ellie, who's like the niece or the daughter of the mayor. And I have no idea why she's taking this job or doing that, because she has all sorts of connections and other things that she's doing, but she's very like capable and competent and organized and sort of like the brain of the team, I would say, in some ways. And really the appeal of it, though, is getting to know those four characters as they investigate this big sort of mystery in their city. And that's another piece of it, is there's things that are happening and you're trying to figure it out. It's a very unique sort of RPG. You said that you're not an amazing gamer. I wanted to circle back on that and say that you are, because the amazing gamers is really just like amazing people who play games. I'm terrible at video games. I am like shockingly inept at times at video games, and I just sort of embrace and own it.
Yeah.
So when I say amazing, it's more just amazing people who happen to play video games. And then I lied. This is my final thing. That another connection we had in the early going is that we both have the best birthday on the calendar. It's it's like science. It's like facts. Like, yeah. There's no way, because like, I'm just going to break it down for those who don't know. The best birthday on the calendar is January 21st.
Yes, no and competition.
I can prove this, because January is, when you live in New England, we're up north where we live, January is like the worst month on the calendar. It's just brutal. It's cold. It's dark.
It's depressing.
It's 31 days.
Yeah, I know. It's the longest, most depressing drag of a month.
It just is. And like, for most people, I do not know how they get through that thing.
Right?
But for me, when like 3 weeks in rolls around and you can sort of gather everyone for like a little bit of favorite things or just whatever you want to do, I always feel like, okay, all right, January, we've seen you off once again. Like, it's for me, like, that's the perfection of it. I don't know if that's been your experience too, but
I would say so. I feel like, especially because it's coming off of the holidays when you're around everybody and it's such high energy and all these cheerful, joyful times. And so you're kind of a little bit of like a joy hangover, I feel like, by the time January starts. So it's nice to have that little like shining beacon of hope the 3 weeks in of like, okay, but my birthday's coming up. You can bring people together. You can do whatever you want. Like, it's just a really good highlight in an otherwise kind of dull month.
You and I are on the same page with this one. Well, Rachel, it's been amazing having you as my guest today. Thank you so much for joining Amazing Gamers.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was a ton of fun.
Thank you for joining the Amazing Gamers podcast, a Just for Fun production that's recorded whenever Nathan has a little bit of free time and a friend to discuss a cool topic with. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and that you'll circle back with us next time. Until then, may all your gaming be amazing.